Welcome to your AEW Dynamite review. It is Wednesday, April 28, 2021. I am the Solid Monster. Thank you for choosing me for your Dynamite coverage. Getting ready for the final Dynamite review for the month of April. And what a Dynamite it was, I have to say, second week in a row. Very strong effort from AEW on what was really the go-home show to what feels like kind of a pay-per-view next week. We had the big go-home promo. This was the parlay between the Inner Circle and the Pinnacle. We had ourselves a good old-fashioned parlay, whatever the fuck that is. Both teams coming face-to-face in the middle of the ring. No fisticuffs, no physicality. This was the go-home promo. This was their chance to sell you and me on this big War Games match coming up next week. And they knocked it out of the park with that segment. Every wrestling promotion can learn something from that segment tonight. That segment, again, nobody put their hands on the other guy. There was no run-in. There were no weapons. They used the microphone. The microphone was the biggest weapon in that entire segment. They did about as good of a job as you could do in trying to talk people into being interested in seeing this match. Setting up the stakes, explaining why this match is such a big deal. Why this match is so important to them. Dax Harwood literally came out in the middle of the segment and said he is willing to die. It's pretty stupid. I mean, he just, you know, got lumped in with this group only a few weeks ago. All of a sudden, he's willing to die. You know, that's a little much. But boy, he put everything into it. As ridiculous as that may sound when you really think about it, he put everything into it. But that is an example of how you promote a big match, a big main event level match. Every company, WWE, everyone can learn from that. That is how you sell a match. So I was already looking forward to the Blood and Guts match next week because I've been waiting a year for this thing. And they got me all pumped up when that segment was over. Chris Jericho redeemed himself from that last promo of his that we had. So I will get into that segment and everything else here on the show and some news. There's a lot that happened this past week. So again, thank you for tuning in. Thank you for joining me here tonight. Let's talk about Kenny Omega. Kenny Omega is not only the AEW World Champion. Kenny Omega defended the AEW World title on Sunday at the Impact Rebellion pay-per-view, which I talked about last week. Winner take all, one-on-one with the Impact champion Rich Swann. And wouldn't you know, Kenny Omega has a new piece of hardware to carry around with him. I know, I'm shocked. Shocked, I tell you, that Kenny Omega did not lose the AEW World title to Rich Swann, whose name was never even mentioned on television. Kenny Omega beat Rich Swann. He is the new Impact World Champion. I watched the match. Some people think I didn't watch the match. I did watch the match. Didn't watch the whole pay-per-view, but I watched the main event. I thought it was a very good match. And I thought bringing in Mauro Ranallo really added to the feel. It added a great commentator is what it added. But I thought he was exactly what that match needed, right? That was the perfect soundtrack for that match. Put his talents to work. So it was good to hear Mauro's voice on a wrestling show again. You never really know when we might hear it again. He's not signed anywhere, but I think if companies want to bring him in, if AEW wants to bring him in for a one shot, I wouldn't mind. See, honestly, I think if AEW is going to do anything with Mauro Ranallo, they have that second show, the elusive second show that still hasn't debuted yet on TNT. That, to me, if he were interested, would be the likely destination for someone like Mauro if he was going to do work with AEW. Because, you know, they're not going to break up Jim Ross and Tony Schiavone and Excalibur. But I keep thinking about that second show and saying, you know, that could be a good landing spot for someone like Mauro Ranallo. He should be working in a company like an AEW that has major television if he was going to do wrestling. I wouldn't send him to Impact or Ring of Honor or anything like that. So it was good to hear his voice again. But, you know, again, Kenny is the belt collector. It's his whole gimmick. At no point was, and this is the one flaw in this whole match that they did, at no point did it feel as if the AEW title was in any kind of real jeopardy. At no point did you really believe, even during the match, that Kenny Omega was going to walk out of there without his title. So it was lacking that little bit of drama because AEW, I mean, they pretty much bummed it. Impact was doing all it could to make the match out to be a big deal. AEW did the bare minimum because they didn't have to do more than that. There's a lot more in this for Impact than there is for AEW. And apparently the pay-per-view did really well per Impact standards. So it's benefiting them. I think it's having minimal effect on AEW, but as a fan, it's cool that they can do these types of matches. I want to see more of it. But again, the outcome here was never in doubt. Come on. So now he's got the AAA Mega title, he's got the Impact World title, he's got the AEW title, and who knows, maybe he'll have the NWA title at some point. Maybe he'll come looking for Nick Aldis. Maybe he'll show up in the studio for an episode of NWA Power or an NWA pay-per-view, and he'll take the 10 pounds of gold to complete his collection. The other story, before we get into tonight's show, this is kind of a big story that could and likely will at some point have an effect on AEW. The National Hockey League. Not really a big hockey fan, but I know many of you might be. The NHL is officially ending its 10-year partnership with NBC Sports at the conclusion of this season, which could have a ripple effect on AEW in the years to come. They still have a few years left on their deal with TNT and Turner Sports. Because the NHL has signed a deal not only with ESPN, there were two separate TV packages. They already have a deal inked with ESPN. That's locked in. But now, instead of NBC, they have signed a deal with Warner Media, the parent company of Turner Sports, which owns, among many other networks, TNT, which of course airs AEW Dynamite every Wednesday night. 7-year deal worth over $1 billion. I want to just read you really quickly here from a CNBC story. The belief is NBC was only willing to pay just over $100 million, just $100 million, you know, just a measly little $100 million. That's about as much, that's as high as they were willing to go for the NHL. Chump change per year for NFL or NHL, I should say, writes. Turner came in with a money bazooka, is what the story said. They came in with a money bazooka. That was it. The deal was done. It was made official. Turner plans to incorporate Bleacher Report into its coverage, lure in sports betting opportunities, and have flexibility in the deal to put NHL games on HBO Max when the service is ready to host live sports. And in the years where Turner and not ESPN will be airing the Stanley Cup finals, and again, not ESPN, TNT would likely be the place where those games would air. And so that has a lot of people talking. How is this going to affect AEW? How is this? Are they going to have to move nights? Are they going to be bumped? What's going to happen here? This is awful. This is terrible. Henny Penny, the sky is falling. The sky is not falling. Calm down. I've gotten a lot of emails about this. I've seen a lot of tweets about this. I don't think it has any real impact on them at all. Outside of maybe preempting a few shows at some point, next year, the year after, it's going to be a while. Before this has any kind of impact on AEW, it's going to be a while. But Tony Khan chimed in. He would probably know better than anybody. He signed the deal. He's seen the contract. Tony Khan was on Busted Open Radio this morning. This is what he had to say about the possibility of AEW moving off of Wednesday nights. Said, I know Wednesday is our slot and our home. I am thrilled with our partnership with TNT. It is the lifeblood of our company and our primary revenue source. I've told you guys before, without this TNT deal, they're very well, once the pandemic hit, there would not be an AEW right now. There's a very good chance AEW would not exist. And at the very least, they would have been cutting people the way the WWE did. The money they got out of this deal is what saved the company. That deal they signed in January of last year, 2 months before the pandemic really hit and all the shutdowns hit. I mean, you talk about lucky timing. That deal is what saved this company. And he basically says as much here in this interview. He said, every Wednesday that we do Dynamite for a lot of wrestling fans, it's a really important night of the week. I want everybody to rest assured that they are not going to have to worry. We have a contract with over 2.5 years left for Wednesday nights in this slot. If there was ever an opportunity to move or a deal to be had, I would consider it. If we did something, it would have to be a really good deal for AEW and make sense for us. As it stands right now, that is the spot that we are in. If we move, I would certainly consider a deal if there was something in it for AEW. So, per Tony Khan, they have a contract, and that contract is for Wednesdays, and he's not moving. Unless they make it worth his while. $1 billion. Which actually would be chump change, probably for his father. Was that 3% maybe of his net worth? Now, I don't know. You know, I mentioned that second AEW show that it's becoming the stuff of legend at this point. I'm not sure we'll ever get to see that second AEW show. That one I'm not sure of, actually. You know, I've said that when that time comes to debut that show, what slot would make sense? Saturday is the day that I had suggested. This was months ago. It's kind of halfway through the week after Wednesday. 6:05, right? Whether it's TNT, TBS. I'm an old school guy. I like the idea of AEW running a Saturday at 6:05 time slot show. Maybe 6:05 is not the time slot they think would work for them. I just think it is hilarious to me that, you know, the story on NXT moving to Tuesdays is that, well, NBC Sports is shutting down, and so therefore NXT had to move because they have a deal with the NHL. Hockey games air on Wednesdays, and so they got to move nights, right? So they moved NXT to Tuesday, even though you knew, while that may have been part of the reason why, I don't care what WWE says, we all know what at least part of the reason was that they moved that show. And so far, it has bared fruit, right? NXT is up in the ratings. AEW is up in the ratings. Well over 1 million viewers now, 2 weeks in a row. We'll see if they're down tomorrow when the numbers come out. In the first couple of weeks, though, being on different nights has benefited both shows. It has benefited both companies in a big way. But this idea that NXT had to move because of the NHL and they're going to move the games over to USA Network, and as it turns out, not only will there be no NHL games on USA Network, if anything, there will be NHL games on TNT. It is funny how these things work sometimes. I find that amusing. But in any event, that's your update on AEW. The short version, don't worry. If you're an AEW fan and you're worried that they're going to move nights, they're not moving nights. They're not moving to Tuesdays to compete with NXT because TNT has the NBA. They're not moving to Mondays because Tony Khan has said he's not competing against himself. His family owns an NFL team. He's not competing against Monday Night Football, let alone Monday Night Raw. Raw is garbage. Even still, moving to Monday night to go opposite Raw would be death for AEW. Maybe they would do a little bit better than Impact did when they tried it all those years ago. And it doesn't matter if you think AEW is the better show and Raw is shit. They're established on Monday nights. If AEW were to move to Mondays, they would get creamed. It is not a good idea. So they're not going there. Wednesdays are safe. You need not worry. Let's get into this show tonight. Dynamite opened with Cage, Page, and lots of rage. You like the thumbnail? Tried to rhyme. Cage, Page. I'm not Dr. Seuss, but I try. Cage, Page, and lots of rage. Brian Cage, that is, not to be confused with Christian Cage. You know, if this were WWE, they wouldn't allow this. They wouldn't have two people with the last name Cage. And Brian was there first, so Christian would have to call himself something else. Would have to call himself something else. Who is that in the chat asking about the shirt? Who is that? Somebody asked about that earlier. If it looks a little bit familiar, see, the thing is you can't really see the full shirt right now, but it's actually very appropriate with the first episode of Dark Side of the Ring premiering next week. A certain someone is being featured on that show. Not me, but the subject of the show being Brian Pillman. This is the Brian Pillman shirt. Again, I can't show you the whole thing here, but Brian Pillman was once photographed wearing this very shirt. Love this shirt. Front and back design, I love it. Anyway, we had Cage against Hangman. Team Taz ambushed Hangman as soon as he was making his entrance. He got jumped on the ramp. Dark Order came out to make the save. And Cage powerbombed Hangman on the ramp. That would pretty much tell the story of this match. It would factor into the outcome of the match as well, that powerbomb spot. Cage was beating him down with stomps and suplexes and strikes and all kinds of stuff. Hangman was really unable to fight back. Cage hit an overhead throw at one point. Hangman got his knees up on a standing moonsault attempt, so he was able to try at least to mount some kind of a comeback attempt. Hangman escaped out onto the apron. Cage suplexed him back into the ring for a near fall. Hangman countered a suplex, sent Cage to the floor, and Cage caught Page on a plancha. Plancha attempt out to the floor. Hangman was able to fight out of it. He sent Cage into the ring post, followed that up with his Orihara moonsault off the top rope. In the ring, Cage countered the buckshot lariat attempt into a power slam before hitting a power bomb, a buckle bomb, and then the drill claw for the win. Just like that. Power bomb, buckle bomb, drill claw for the win. I was shocked that Hangman lost. I was shocked the way in which he lost. Cage was dominant for about 90 to 95% of this match. It wasn't just a win. It wasn't a fluke win. Nobody ran out to cause a distraction. He didn't roll him up or hold the ropes or hook the tights. He pinned this fucking guy right in the middle of the ring with his move. I like that. And it was needed, right? Team Taz needed a win. Team Taz lost to Sting and Darby Allin. Last week, Ricky Starks, right, lost to Hangman Page. Team Taz needs to win one every now and then. And not just on Dark. I'm talking big matches on Dynamite. Brian Cage, the FTW champion, right? Big, strong, muscular guy. He's got to win. Got to win to stay relevant. I just didn't expect it to happen here. So the outcome of this match surprised me. Even though, you know, they did the pre-match attack to protect Hangman to some degree. The powerbomb on the ramp. Tony Schiavone made mention of it. So that was their way of trying to protect him. It wasn't just a, you know, in their mind, like a totally clean loss, but it kind of was. It kind of was. And I think Brian Cage will benefit from that. A much needed win. A much needed win for Team Taz. Let me see if I can show you this shirt a little bit more. Let me see here. Here we go. There you go. Ah. Oh. Love this shirt. Love this fucking shirt. Love it. Love it. Wish I knew the artist's name. I'd give the artist a shout out. But if you search for Brian Pillman, you'll see. There was a photo shoot he did many years ago, I think when he went to WWE. Maybe he wore this. You know, actually, the person who I think gave the shirt to Pillman to wear was Mikey Whipwreck. That's how I found out about it. It was a Mikey Whipwreck shirt. I think he gave it to Pillman or told him how to get it or whatever. I don't think this is identical, but it's pretty close. So, actually, on that Dark Side of the Ring episode, I wonder if they'll actually show it. They might actually show photos of Pillman wearing the shirt. I think it's called Overload? Overdrive or Overload, I think, is the title of the shirt, I think. Despite all the rage, he's still just Brian Cage. I like that. I like it. Very good. Very good, Kevin. Very clever. We had the elite members, Kenny Omega, Don Callis, Matt Jackson, Nick Jackson, Doc Gallows, Carl Anderson. Carl Anderson was the only person who wasn't wearing any pants. I don't know why. I hope he was wearing shorts. I didn't look close enough to inspect if he was wearing anything, but that was a little weird. So they're all sitting cramped up in this limousine. Callis is introducing Omega as the Impact World Champion. This is the most promotion that Impact has gotten, and it was the week after the pay-per-view. They promoted Impact more in this one segment post-Rebellion than they did in any of the build-up to the Rebellion event. But they did acknowledge him as the Impact World Champion, although he didn't show off the belt. And Omega, and actually the reason why probably was because this show was taped. So that would explain why. This was not a live show this week. Omega was very upset about Jon Moxley and Eddie Kingston destroying the Elite's trailer last week, ramming it with their truck. They were very upset about that. Omega said he's not afraid. We're not afraid of you. All of a sudden, the horn honked, and they all freaked out. And Michael Nakazawa was driving the limo, and he rolled the window down, and he apologized. He said, oh, I hit the wrong button. So, in fact, they are afraid. They are very much on edge about Jon Moxley and Eddie Kingston. And Omega said Kingston would have to face his goons first. And he could start later on tonight with Nakazawa. We had the Young Bucks taking on Matt and Mike Seidel. A tag team title eliminator match. If the Seidel brothers were to win, they would get a shot at the titles. Spoiler alert, the Seidel boys, they ain't getting a shot at the titles. But you already knew that. They go to a break. All throughout the commercial break, the Bucks are dominating. There was a spot where Matt Jackson rolled Nick out of the ring and took his spot. And Rick Knox, this fucking guy. You would think that the Bucks were like the Usos and you couldn't tell them apart. Identical twins. The referee is standing right there. Clearly, plain as day, the wrong buck is in the ring. The illegal buck is in the ring. The counterfeit buck is in the ring. Rick Knox just stands there and stares. Why? Because he's a fucking moron. Even on commentary, was it Excalibur or Tony? I think it was Tony Schiavone. Even he couldn't believe it. He's like, oh, the referee's not going to do anything about this? Why is he not saying anything? Why is he not forcing Matt Jackson to get out of the ring? Because he's a moron. Rick Knox is a terrible referee. AEW is not exactly known for having the best officiating in pro wrestling. Exhibit A, I give to you, Rick Knox. So, we had the illegal buck in the ring. We had Matt Jackson getting Matt Seidel in position for an indie taker. Seidel fights out of it, lands a standing corkscrew moonsault. We get a dive from both of the brothers. Matt hits a standing hurricanrana in the ring on both Bucks, takes him over. And he got a ridiculously close. Seidel got a ridiculously close near fall. Crucifix pin attempt. It was close. They said it wasn't three. I'll take their word. But it's Rick Knox, so who knows. Mike tagged in. He ran into a low blow from Matt Jackson. Matt punched him right in the dick. Camera zoomed in on Matt. He did the shock face reaction. Rick Knox didn't see it because he was distracted because he sucks. So the Bucks super kicked Matt off the apron. They destroyed Mike with the BTE trigger. And the Young Bucks, well, I mean, it wasn't a title match, but again, you knew going into it that the Seidel brothers, they'd look good, and they did. They look really good here in defeat. You know, Matt Seidel, I actually really am happy to see him getting a shot on television to go out there and do his thing. Because he's very talented. He had that unfortunate botch in his debut appearance in the Battle Royal. We get the Mantar Bella. Look at that. The Mantar Super Chat. Who was that? We haven't had a Mantar Super Chat in a while. Original Project. Says, my guy Solo. I had my grandma watching, but damn, she liked the Inner Circle against Pinnacle, so it is something to watch. You see, even grandmothers know a good segment when they watch one. I think that Original Project's grandmother should probably be booking WWE television. She obviously has better taste in television than a lot of the people in that company do. I'm all for taking your grandmother and giving her Bruce Pritchard's job. So if she's interested, I mean, she may be retired, but if she's not doing anything and she wants to make a little bit of scratch on the side, I wouldn't mind her taking Bruce's spot. And Bruce can go do his podcast with Conrad. Thank you, Original Project, dropping $100 on the final stream here in the month of April. I'm going to guess that you're going to be the winner tonight. That's my guess. Thank you. And say hi to your grandma for me. I meant what I said. She should replace Bruce Pritchard. Can't be any worse. So after the match, out comes SCU. Kazarian, Christopher Daniels, and Kazarian points out the fact that they have not lost the match since December when he laid down the ultimatum. Remember? On the Britt Baker segment, the waiting room might have been on Dark, and said, look, Daniels is second-guessing himself. Maybe I can't do this anymore. Maybe I'm washed up. Maybe I'm too old. He said, no. You and I are going to go out there, and the next time you and I lose a match, we're done. SCU is done. And they have gone on a win streak ever since December. Here we are now in April, almost into May. So he wanted to remind everybody of that. Daniel said, you know, I was very excited to get into the ring with my friends, the Bucks. But as I look at you guys, I don't see my friends out here. I see a couple of bitches. These are not the friends that I knew. They pointed out they're the number one contenders, and they're ready to end the reign of the Young Bucks. So it looks like we're getting SCU against the Young Bucks for the tag team titles. That is going to be the final SCU match, because SCU, I don't see him winning the belts. And Daniels, look, Daniels is getting older, and maybe he is nearing the end of his run. I don't know what his plans are as far as staying in the ring, scaling back. I don't know. And I'm looking forward to the match. I think SCU and the Young Bucks, and you have the drama hanging over the match of this potentially being the final match that Kazarian and Daniels will ever wrestle together, at least in this company. I think it's great. I think it's a great attraction for the show next month. Speaking of great attractions, we have Jade Cargill. We had a Jade Cargill video package. She did all of her posing because that's what she does. You know, Jade, look, if I look like Jade Cargill, I'd pose too. I'd be standing there going like this. You know, I'd be making all the different poses. I'd rub baby oil all over my body. You should be thanking your lucky stars that I'm not doing that right now. Only because I'm wearing my new shirt. Otherwise, I would be. And then YouTube would take me down, and that would be the end of this channel. So we won't do that. Ryan, thank you for the super chat. Bailey Taker, thank you very much. In the video package, though, Jade was talking about the fact that all these managers in AEW are courting her. They all want to sign her. Apparently, she's a free agent. That's what Jim Ross said. Jade Cargill is the hottest free agent in AEW. Is she not under contract? Did Tony Khan not sign her to a contract? Because if so, somebody in WWE ought to swoop in and steal her. Because this woman is a star in the making. You can send her on down to developmental. She could work her way up through NXT. Apparently, she's the hottest free agent. But she said, you know, I don't want to sign with any of these managers because they all want a cut of my money. Meanwhile, she'll probably end up signing with one of them. I really hope it's not Vicky. You never even see Vicky Guerrero on TV. She signs with Vicky, we'll never see Jade Cargill again. I don't think she needs a manager. You know, I guess if I had a pick, though, of the people who are managing right now, you know, you could do worse than Matt Hardy. At least he's got a faction. They get some TV time. Maybe Matt Hardy. But again, I don't really think she needs one. But here's one guy who has a manager now and is actually very entertaining in the role. Penta. Penta El Cerro M with Alex Abrahantes in his corner against Orange Cassidy. Trent came out with Orange Cassidy. And maybe I missed this last week. What is up with Justin Roberts saying Trent's name in the form of a question when he comes out? I have to imagine this is some kind of inside joke, maybe from Being the Elite, that I'm not aware of. I find it incredibly fucking annoying. He comes out, he goes, Trent? Burr? Trent? I'm like, all right, there's obviously some kind of inside joke that the audience was not let in on here. It's fucking annoying. I wish they would stop doing that. So, Penta and Orange Cassidy. I could see this being a very polarizing match. I feel like this is the kind of match that you either really, really hate or you really enjoy. I fell more into the category of enjoyed, although I am not a fan of all the gaga, you know, with Cassidy at this point. All the goofiness, it's a little much for me. But Penta pulled off his glove. Orange Cassidy was going to put his hands in his pockets and Penta stopped him. And Penta said, well, if you could put on a show, so can I. And he started to peel off his glove, which he did. and he tossed it outside the ring, and Alex caught it. And then Orange Cassidy pulled off his sunglasses, and he threw them outside, and Trent went to go catch them, and he dropped them. Trent. So he dropped the glasses. We got to see Orange Cassidy. I will say this, in terms of talent, not everybody can do this. Orange Cassidy, with his hands in his pockets, did an arm drag. I've not seen that before. But indeed, he did a no-arms arm drag to Penta. So Penta ended up outside the ring, and Orange Cassidy went for a dive out through the ropes. This was the coolest spot of the match. Penta catches him in mid-dive, and he presses him over his head with one arm. And then he dropped him down face-first on the ring apron. That was cool. I like that. Come back from break, and Penta is setting up the arm breaker. Orange Cassidy is trying to stop it. And what he's trying to do is not just stop the move, but what he's trying to do is take his hand and put it in his pocket, which at least made sense because that way Penta wouldn't be able to use it, you know, and bend it backwards. So they did some more comedy here with that. Cassidy super kicked Penta. He fired back with a couple of super kicks of his own. And he went for the orange punch. Penta just clobbered him with a super kick. Cassidy hit beach break, covered Penta. Bryce Remsburg, the referee, said that Penta's shoulder was up, which to his credit, because Bryce Remsburg actually has some sense as a referee, he refused to start the count. Cassidy caught Penta with the Stun Dog Millionaire, spinning DDT for a near fall. Abrahantes can see that Penta was in great distress, so he decided to do what he did last week, which is get up on the ramp with a microphone in his head, try to distract Orange Cassidy, starts talking shit to him. Cassidy pulls him in over the top rope, and Penta hits Cassidy in the gut, goes for a package pile driver. Orange Cassidy slips out. Trent then, without the referee seeing, takes the microphone that Alex was using, and he passes it to Orange Cassidy, who clobbers Penta with the mic. And that allows him to get the win. I'm not really a fan of Penta losing. I would like to see him rack up some wins, consecutive wins. But I thought he looked great in this match. Again, I love that one-arm spot where he held up Orange Cassidy after catching him on the dive out of the ring and dropped him. And I thought it was a fun match, despite all the goofiness with Orange Cassidy, which I'm not completely on board with, but despite that, I thought this was a fun match. Tony Schiavone, earlier in the day, interviewed Britt Baker in the back, and basically she just said that she was going to work her way up the rankings, and that's exactly what she did, and now she's the number one contender for the Women's Championship. That was it. It was her and Reba. Rebel, Reba. They did the whole DMD thing. They had Tony Schiavone do it too, DMD. So they cut away. And who do they cut away to? Tony Schiavone, who has now teleported to the ring. That was earlier in the day. Now we're in real time. Back to Tony. Tony this time now is in the ring. And he is in the ring for the parlay between the Pinnacle and the Inner Circle. And before I get into this segment, which was the best thing on the entire show, let me just tell you before I forget, I want to let you guys in on a little offer that's going on. Take advantage of this. You guys can get 3 free months. That says 30-day free trial. Well, guess what? Now through May 24th, we're up in the ante. It's not just a 30-day free trial. You can get 3 free months of Amazon Music. Just plug that link in you see on your screen. GetAmazonMusic.com/Solomonster. You like music? Of course you do. Who the fuck doesn't like music? I'm telling you, try it out. Amazon Music, it's good shit. I got them all. I got Spotify. I got Pandora Plus. Spotify Premium. You guys can get Amazon Music for free for 90 days. GetAmazonMusic.com/Solomonster. I wanted to make sure I didn't forget. get on that because that's only through May 24th. You want 3 months free. You got to do it now. Don't let that run out. It's a great deal. Now, let's get to this parlay. Let's get to the big, really, I was going to say the big sell job, which is what this was for Blood and Guts next week. This was the go-home promo. This was the go-home segment. This is what you would see on a Monday night before a Sunday pay-per-view in WWE, only we got it on a Wednesday. We had both teams lined up face-to-face in the middle of the ring, staring each other down after making their big entrances with their security forces. It was just the Pinnacle and the Inner Circle, nose-to-nose in the middle of the ring. Tony Schiavone, I don't even know why he was in the ring. He didn't have to be there. There was no need for him to be present for any of this. We did learn the match is going to be two rings with an opening 5-minute period. Every 2 minutes, a new man will enter until all 10 men have entered, at which point the match becomes submission or surrender. Just like old school war games. They didn't say anything about a roof. It's going to have a roof. Some of the artwork that they're using on social media shows a roof. It shows a top. It should have. The whole point is that they're trapped and locked like caged animals inside the cell. You got to have a roof on the cage. You can't have people climbing in and climbing out the way that NXT does it. So this will be very much like old school war games in terms of how it looks, in terms of how it's set up, in terms of the rules. There is one thing here I thought was pretty dumb, though. Tony goes to flip the coin. We're going to figure out who's going to get the man advantage here in the coin toss. He goes to flip the coin, but Sean Spears smacks the coin out of his hand. He stops him. And he says, we don't need a coin toss. It's going to be advantage Pinnacle because we were lured into this match. So therefore, we're going to have the advantage. Sean Spears cuts the first promo. He says they're going to give their blood for this match. He looks at Sammy Guevara and he jokes. He goes, when was the last time you were even in a match? Which is true. We haven't seen Sammy Guevara wrestle in what feels like a few months. I don't know if he's hurt, nursing a secret minor injury, or they just didn't have anything for him to do. But he pointed that out. Tells Sammy that Jericho is leading him into deep waters and says that I'm the guy that's going to step on your head when you're drowning. Sammy Guevara takes the mic, tells Sean Spears ever since he came to AEW, he has been a failure. In fact, in the place that you came from, you were a failure. Which has got to sting because it's true. May 5th, he says, you're all going to fail. You want the advantage? You got it. I'll even start for my team. Sammy says he'll start. I guess it's official. Maybe he'll start. Says he'll start with the popcorn guy. He doesn't care who it is. He'll fight everybody. Tony Schiavone then butts in. The only role he really played in this entire segment. He then butts in and he says, well, I guess the Pinnacle will get the man advantage. And I'm sitting here and I'm going, what? What are you talking about? Nobody from the Inner Circle objected to any of this. Now, I guess, what is it, babyface bravado? Is that what it is? It's stupid. Usually there's a coin toss, or like the way NXT does it, they have a match to determine the man advantage. And here you had Sean Spears basically say, no coin toss, we get the advantage. Nobody from the Inner Circle objects. Nobody from the Inner Circle stops him or says anything about it. I thought that was incredibly dumb. That was very stupid. That was really the only stupid thing I thought in this segment. That was the one thing that really annoyed me. Why would they just let that slide? Who are these guys to say, you know what? Fuck you. We're going to take the man advantage. And nobody from the baby faces says a word. Very dumb. Cash Wheeler does some talking. He tells Santana and Ortiz they've been Jericho's lapdogs for the past year. And if that's the version that they bring of themselves to this match next week, they won't make it out. Dax Harwood grabs the microphone. He says, next week, someone's life is going to be shortened. He accepts that. He understands that. But when the door shuts and the bolt locks, they're in his world now. And this is where he said he is not afraid to die I'm sure his wife and his daughter, I think he has a daughter, I'm sure they would object to hearing that. What, you know, these two teams have been feuding for a matter of weeks. It seems a little extreme to say that you're willing to die in this cage match next week. Maybe, you know, I look at like Adam Cole and Kyle O'Reilly in NXT. They've been feuding for a while. They had a friendship and a partnership. Kyle felt betrayed. These two guys hate each other's guts. If Kyle O'Reilly were to turn around and say, Adam, you know, when we face off next week, there's no turning back. It's going to be you and me. We're going to do this one time only. One man's going to walk in. One man's going to walk out. And if I have to die, then so be it. You know, at least then you would say, well, boy, there's a personal issue here between these two guys, right? He was his best friend in the world turned on him. This seems a little bit extreme for two teams that have been feuding for about 6 weeks. I'm just saying. I think Dax Harwood may need to get his priorities a little bit straight. But he says, Santana and Ortiz, he goes, I want you to grab your kids and hold them close and kiss them and then get down on one knee and I want you to whisper a message from Uncle Dax and tell them that Daddy is not coming back home. Ortiz is holding Santana back because as soon as Dax started talking about children, Santana got very heated, got very emotional. Ortiz said that's exactly what he wants. Don't fall into his trap. So then Santana took the mic. Remember, I said last week, give this man more mic time. Take the mic away from Jake Hager and put it in the hands of Santana. We need to see him. We need to see LAX on television cutting more promos. We got some work here from Santana. He says, he looks at his watch, he goes, 7 days. 7 days. You're going to be locked in a cage with them. He goes, you ever been locked up before? Because we have. And he said, May 5th, my hands are going to do the talking. It was short, it was to the point, but it was intense. And I maintain we need to hear more on the mic from this Santana and Ortiz going forward. We should hear these guys cutting promos on television more often. MJF, who's been awfully quiet the entire time, very unlike him, he pipes up. He turns his attention to Chris Jericho. He says, you know, without Jericho, there is no AEW. Jericho was, he was the ace in the hole. Jericho was the top guy. He was the draw. He was the bridge for the lapsed fan to come over and enjoy AEW. He goes, I can't imagine the kind of pressure that you must be under. He goes, Chris, you look exhausted. Talking about how tired he looks, I guess from carrying the company on his back, I guess. He goes, there's got to be a lot of stress, a lot of paranoia. He goes, we can all see it. But it's okay, because come next week, I'm going to do the humane thing. I'm going to take the crown that sits upon your head. I'm going to take that crown, heavy as it may be, and I'm going to place it atop my own head, and my family will replace the inner circle, but don't get it twisted. MJF says he appreciates it, which is why, when all is said and done, he will look down on Chris Jericho. He will utter the two words, thank you. He says, Jericho's spot will now belong to MJF. And Jericho grabs the mic for the big finale. He calls MJF a self-righteous little prick. He goes, you want my spot? You want that spot? He goes, you got to earn it. Last week, you made a comment about me curtain jerking in WCW when I was 25 years old. He goes, you're damn right I was. He goes, I'm damn proud of it because it led me to where I am today. He goes, what you didn't mention is that when I was 25 years old, not only maybe I was curtain jerking in WCW, but you know what else I was doing? Or you know what else I had already done? He goes, I went to go headline in Mexico and in Japan and in Germany. I was working all these different places and I was learning what respect is, something that you never did. That's what I was doing. And he said that, you want my spot a good place to begin? Earning it would be beating me in the inner circle at Blood and Guts because we are blood and guts. And if MJF wants to talk about family, this is a family. They have been a part of AEW from the very beginning. Hager had my back when I was threatened with assassination. I guess that was on a WWE overseas tour in 2012. He goes, those lapdogs you were talking about, Santana and Ortiz, said they're wild animals that have clawed their way to the top. He goes, Sammy, I personally handpicked Sammy to be part of this group. And you single-handedly got him to quit. You chased him away. He goes, never again. I will never let that happen again. Says, you're going to have to kill us to make us surrender. And he ended with this. He said, if 1969 was the summer of love, 2021 is the summer of violence and pain at Blood and Guts. Summer starts early for MJF. They all made mean mugs and the music started. And that was the segment. This was fantastic. As far as building to a big match, you couldn't have done a better job. There was no pull apart. It's so cliche. Actually, we see far too much of it, I think, in AEW, where before a match, after a match, here come all the factions, and they all brawl through the tunnel. It's too much. It's overkill. There's too much of that in AEW. So to have these two teams come together and start beating each other up, and the referees come out and break them up and separate them, save that for the match. Save that for the cage. And it's such an overdone tool that they rely on. It was nice to not have a pull apart and just have these two guys and their respective teams come face to face and cut promos on each other. And the best part about it, even though almost all of them cut promos, Wardlow didn't. You know who else didn't? Jake Hager. He stayed the fuck quiet for the entire time. He kept his fucking mouth shut. That's the way it should be. I said, less mic time for Hager, more mic time for Santana. And we got that this week. Hager stood there. He mean mugged and looked mean. That's all he had to do. He didn't have to say a word. So thankfully, we didn't have any talk about meat straws this week, sucking your meat through a straw. We didn't have any of that. We got down to brass tacks. They talked about the things that mattered. They talked about respect. They talked about pain and death and violence and blood and guts and all the things that you expect to see in this match next week. I expect to see a lot of blood. We've seen blood on TNT before. Just because they're on television doesn't mean they can't have blood. AEW does a lot more blood than WWE does. You think they're going to have a blood and guts match? The word blood is in the fucking name. So it's going to be bloody. It's going to be violent. There's going to be, I don't know if they'll have weapons in the cage, if they're going to bring chairs and tables and tacks and trash cans in there, but that's what this match is all about. And I thought they did a great job of conveying that. They're going to save the fists for next week. Jericho, as I said at the beginning of the stream, he redeemed himself. That last promo, he had really, you know, MJF just mopped the floor with him last time. And actually, this time, I think they both did a very good job, but Jericho really did. He had a nice comeback promo here on the mic. Shawn Spears was probably the weakest of the bunch, and he was fine. I mean, there was nothing wrong with his little promo, but he was easily the weakest of the bunch. I think you would all concur. Robbie Burns says, who is turning on Jericho? I don't expect anybody to turn on Jericho. We've already had the big swerve with MJF. I just think, they just went babyface. The Inner Circle did. Yeah, the question is, who goes over? that's really the question that we should be asking. Who goes over in this match? Who wins and who do you think should win? Who do you want to win? You can make an argument for both teams. I would argue that the heels would need to win because the Pinnacle is a far fresher, newer group than the Inner Circle is. Although the Inner Circle, now we're seeing them for the first time as baby faces, so it kind of feels new a little bit. But I mean, MJF just formed his group a matter of weeks ago. For them to go into the biggest match they could possibly do, I mean, it already feels a little rushed that they're doing it this quickly. But for them to go in there and lose, how do you come back from that? How does the Pinnacle lose? And then when the event is over, they just kind of move on as if it didn't happen. I don't think you can. But you're not going to break them up this soon. They just got together. The Inner Circle, they just turned babyface. So you could say, well, the babyfaces should go over. Big feud like this, if this is going to be the blow-off, then the good guys should win. I don't think they lose much by losing this match. So who do I think goes over? I'm going to go with the Pinnacle. I think they should win. I think they will win. I think the heels need this more than the babyfaces do because the heels need to be established. Inner Circle is already established. Jericho is already established. MJF cannot form this new group and go in there in their first big, you know, battle and lose. Because I don't know where you go from there. And there's no bigger match as a unit for them to do than the one that we're getting next week. But I thought this segment was fantastic. And you guys seem to agree with me. One outcome, that's right, Pinnacle wins. Art Minus says Inner Circle splits after Blood and Guts. They had a great run. Look, if they split, that would be fine too. I don't think they have to split in terms of turning on each other, though. Somebody said before, who turns on who? You can have the Inner Circle go their separate ways and shake on it and not, you know, attack each other and eat each other from within. Jericho can go off and do his thing. Sammy could go do his thing. Santana and Ortiz, they could be more prominently featured in the tag division. Jake Hager can either go to Dark or he could go work for some other company. That's fine. It's fine with me. But yeah, you're right. I mean, they could lose and then go their separate ways because really, what's left for them to do? What is left for the Inner Circle to do after going in, going to war and coming out on the losing end? You know, like you said, they had a good run. Maybe it's time that run comes to an end. Michael Nakazawa. He was in the ring. Actually, you know, before I get to this, let me just... I am gonna just take a couple of super chats here. I don't want to fall too far behind with your messages. I know you guys have a lot of thoughts about the show tonight. So let's just take a quick look here. And Naif, thank you for the $10, Naif. I know he's joining us. And Ryan Spies says, at least Team Taz looked effective again. LOL. Well, they did. At least their guy won. So I don't know what the LOL is for. All right, we'll get to the other super chats here in a little bit. Again, if you want to send one in, by all means, see the special amounts down below. I'm going to read all your messages here. So if you want me to check out your message, answer your question, get those on in. Nakazawa was in the ring. He was sitting in a chair. He had a headset on. And out comes Eddie Kingston. So Eddie Kingston comes down to the ring, and he is followed by Kenny Omega and Don Callis. They come out onto the stage. They don't get into the ring. And Kenny tells Eddie, you don't get the champ just because you asked. He goes, you're going to have to face my goons. And you're going to have to start with Nakazawa. From behind, Nakazawa hits Kingston with a laptop. Eddie is, I mean, come on. You're going to hit Eddie Kingston with a laptop. You're just asking for trouble. He's been hit with a lot worse than that, I can promise you. So Kingston elbows the back of Nakazawa's head, hits an exploder, spinning back fist, takes down Nakazawa. Eddie is on the mic. He tells Kenny Omega, get in the ring or I'm going to break Nakazawa's ankle. And he places Nock's ankle in a chair. So he's going to Pillmanize him. There's another Pillman reference, right? We got a lot of Brian Pillman references of late. We've got Pillman coming up on Dark Side of the Ring next week. We've got Brian Pillman Jr., who works for this company. I'm wearing this shirt. Now he's going to be Pillmanized. I like all the Pillman references. It's like Pillman is cool again now in 2021. Pillman was ahead of his time, is what he was. He was way ahead of his time, at least with that loose cannon character. So he's going to break it, and Kenny is kind of feigning concern for Nakazawa, but he doesn't give a shit. He just called the guy a goon. You think he cares? And he tells him, he goes, go ahead, break his ankle. He deserves it. So Kenny reminds him, he goes, you know, I've got more than one goon. And at that moment, who should come stumbling out of the, I guess, the heel entrance tube, but Brandon Cutler. And he's all disheveled, and he looks like somebody just kicked his ass, and he staggers right at Kenny Omega's feet, right in front of him. Omega can see this. 5 seconds go by. Omega doesn't sell any of this, and then he gets jumped from behind by Jon Moxley. This was also very stupid. How does he not see this guy who looks like he just got his ass handed to him and think, oh, wait a minute, what's wrong? Who did this to you? No, he just stands there until Moxley is ready to come out and attack him from behind. So, again, this is your champion. Your champion should not look this dumb. Kenny Omega looked very dumb. Don't ever make your champion look dumb. We just had to go through The Miz as champion not too long ago. And then he was wearing bunny costumes a few weeks later. Don't make your champions look dumb, at least your world champions. So he gets jumped from Moxley from behind. Moxley gets him in the ring, locks him in a sleeper hold. And they lock Kenny's ankle in the chair. They're going to break his ankle when Don Callis begins to plead for Kenny's well-being. Tells him to stop, don't do it. Kingston wants a match. Callis says, we'll find a way to make it work. And they say what they want is a tag team match. Why do they want a tag team match? Why wouldn't they want... See, this is why I don't understand. Why not ask, you know, for a championship match? Or if you're going to ask for a tag match, then why not ask for a tag team title match against the Bucks? Take the belts away as a way to get back at Kenny and that whole elite crew. No, what they want is a tag team match against Omega and Nakazawa. And again, they threaten to break Kenny's ankle, and Callis, he acquiesces and says, okay, you got your match. You got your match. So, they didn't break his ankle. Why would Eddie Kingston not go, fuck you, and stomp on his ankle anyway? I don't get that. I guess, you know, they have to do the match, I guess, right? So if he did that, then Omega would have to sell an injury. So I guess I do get it, but they could have maybe done this a little bit differently because it just doesn't seem like an Eddie Kingston thing to do to let this guy go after they fucked up his ankle, right? One good turn deserves another, and they let the guy go. But there will, in fact, be more than one match now on Dynamite next week. Weren't sure about that. They made the comment it's going to be a one-match event next week, Blood and Guts, and not only do we have this match, there's a whole lineup for next week, including one match in particular that came out of nowhere for Dynamite in 2 weeks. Actually, it's not on the show next week. It's in 2 weeks. But I was not expecting this announcement. I'll tell you what that match is in a little bit. So Taz is backstage with Tony Schiavone. And Christian comes walking up. And Christian says, you know, Taz, you used to be the man. You were the most badass guy in wrestling. You backed it up. You didn't just talk shit, but you were able to back it up in the ring. People feared you. Talked a big game. Now, he goes, you still talk a big game, but the backing up part, not so much. Said that he surrounded himself with people who were bigger and badder than him, and when they find their inevitable success, he, being Taz, will be right there to bask in all of it just to feed his own ego. Christian represents what Taz wishes he could do. He wishes that he could come back to the ring and wrestle again. He says, go ahead, send the members of Team Taz one by one. I'll knock them all down. And he goes, hopefully you guys will soon realize, that being the members of Team Taz, that you are better off without this man. And he walked off. Just give me Christian against Ricky Starks, please. Just give me that match. Give me that match and I'll be happy. It sounds like we're going to get it. I don't know when, but maybe in 2 weeks. Christian Cage one-on-one on Dynamite with Ricky Starks. That's the match that I want to see. Chris Statlander one-on-one with Penelope Ford. She is now part of Best Friends, so she came out with Orange Cassidy. I think Trent was there. Trent? We had a distraction from Kip Sabian that allowed Penelope to hit a knee drop. They go to break, come back, and Statlander is attacking in the corner with a running knee. Hits a Blue Thunder Bomb for a near fall. Penelope Ford comes back with a diving blockbuster for two. Statlander comes back on her own. Solar Eclipse for the near fall. Ford went for some kind of handspring move. Statlander countered it into the Big Bang Theory for the win. Not much to it. It was okay. No great shakes, but it was another win for Chris Statlander. She's on the comeback trail ever since her injury. She is unbeaten on Dynamite. We had the Factory. QT Marshall, Nick Camerato, is, I call him Caveman Camerato. And Aaron Solo had Anthony Ogogo in their corner, taking on the Nightmare Family, Dustin Rhodes, Billy Gunn, and Lee Johnson. Lee Johnson, midway through this, was running wild on everybody. I refuse to call him by that big shoddy name because I just think it sounds stupid. So I'm not going to call him that. His name is Lee Johnson. That's what I call him. So Lee Johnson hit a Blue Thunder Bomb for a near fall, and he fought off Aaron Solo, Camerato, before hitting a corkscrew dive. Referee, though, was distracted, and Anthony Ogogo caught Lee Johnson with a body blow right to the midsection. And he crumbled in a heap, put him back in the ring, hit Billy Gunn as well with a punch to the gut. Either that or he got the runs. I don't know, but Billy grabbed his midsection and collapsed to the floor. I've had that feeling before. So that was enough for QT Marshall to steal the pin on Lee Johnson for the win. Like a good heel, he didn't do the work, but he sure did take credit for it. After the match, Camerato attacked Dustin with a cowbell. Factory was walking to the back, but QT Marshall wanted to bask in this victory a little bit more, and he got attacked by the Gun Club. Out came Billy Gunn's kids, like roaches. They come from everywhere. So they attack, and the Factory ran back out. They brawled with the Gun Club. QT decided to hightail it out of there. Now, when they entered, I should mention that QT and his team entered on Cody's bus. So they followed them from the parking lot into the building, and they came off of Cody has this personal bus that he paid for. And Tony Schiavone was appalled by this. He goes, "Oh my God, that's Cody's bus. That's awful." He was greatly offended by this. He goes, "You know how much those buses cost?" So QT leaves, you know, the scene of all the mayhem and everything the guys are fighting. He's going back to the bus. And as he approaches, and you knew where this was going, as he approaches the bus, you could even see through the glass by the door who's waiting for him but Cody Rhodes. And Cody starts beating him up, and he rips his shirt off like he's Hulk Hogan. If someone put Hogan in the dryer, he rips his shirt off. QT is trying to escape Cody. He climbs to the top of the bus. Now, this was a good visual. This I actually liked. The camera is shooting this from down below. Somewhere up above, but you can see the top of the bus. Cody has now chased him up to the top of the bus. A cluster of, I guess, wrestlers, fans, have gathered down below. Aubrey Edwards has followed them up onto the roof of the bus. This is not a match, but it kind of looks like one. And Cody puts him in a figure four leg lock on top of the bus. And then QT is just feverishly tapping out, and Cody stands up, and now Cody is posing. And here's what I want to know. Was Cody just hiding out on the bus the entire time? Where'd he come from? Was he hiding in the closet? And he just decided, okay, I'm going to wait, and when they come back, I'm going to surprise him. Just wondering where he was the entire time. I thought it was a cool visual. I still don't give two shits about Cody against QT Marshall. You can never get me interested enough in this match. This is a match that belongs on Dark. I'm sorry. And, you know, they're going to do the match next week. Hopefully that'll be the end of it. But at least they're doing it on TV. They're not building it up for the pay-per-view. QT Marshall one-on-one against Cody would be a huge downgrade for Cody if that was the Double or Nothing match. So at least they're getting rid of it on TV next week. Cameras caught up with Kip Sabian in the back. He was going to go try to talk to Miro. Miro, of course, is trying to branch out on his own. He's been very upset. He feels held back. He came here to win championships. He hasn't been able to do that. Kip is going to go try to clear the air with Miro. And he walks into the room, and Miro sees him. And what does Miro do? Miro beats the fuck out of this guy, as he should. He starts beating up Kip. He throws him into a locker. He grabs his arm. He slams the door on his arm. And then at the end of this vicious assault, as Kip Sabian is sitting up against the wall on the ground with a broken arm, Miro grabs him in for a hug and says, "I forgive you." So Psycho Miro, I like this. This is the kind of Miro that I've been waiting to see. Psychotic Miro, who just beats people up and then says, and then forgives them and hugs them like they're his best friend. We need more of this. This is what we need to see more of with Miro. And I assume that pretty much all but ends the partnership for good, even though he forgave him, between Miro and Kip Sabian, which ran its course once Arcade Anarchy was over. That was it. There was no need for these two to be hanging around each other anymore. Arcade Anarchy was the big payoff, right? The two gamer guys, they did the Arcade Anarchy. That should have been the end of it, and it looks like it was. But that's the Miro that we need to see more of on TV. That's the Miro that could be challenging and winning, potentially, the TNT title from Darby Allin at some point. I said it's going to be Miro or Lance Archer. Right now, it's looking more like Archer. But it could be Miro. Miro will have TNT gold before this year is over. Just a matter of when and who does he beat for it. Speaking of Darby, that brings us to our main event. Darby Allin defending the TNT Championship. Before we go on here, I got to give a shout out to Leon Orange. Thank you for becoming a Sound Up channel member tonight, good sir. It's good to hear from you, Leon. Hope you enjoy our little community there. We don't bite. We only have a few crazies in there, not too many. You'll fit right in. Darby Allin with Sting in his corner. Sting is like a manager. He's basically a glorified manager at this point. Taking on 10 of the Dark Order, Preston Vance for the TNT Championship. The story they told coming into the match, they had a brief video package on this, and then again the announcers at the beginning were talking about the fact that Brody Lee, right, former leader of the Dark Order, Brody Lee personally recruited Preston Vance. They showed the vignette where he brought him into the fold. And they had Preston Vance talking about the fact that, you know, not only was he handpicked by Brody Lee, but to be able to challenge for the championship that Brody won, that he held last year, to be able to win that would have meant the world to him here on this show. And I like that. I like how they try to give people a reason to get invested in... There's one of the new super chats. Look at that. Tony Khan. There he is. There's the man himself, the two Tonys, and the guy in the middle. Whoever that guy, that Jerry Lynn guy, what'd he ever do? But I like the fact that they wanted, instead of just having just a pedestrian sort of run-of-the-mill match, run-of-the-mill TNT title defense, they tried to work a personal angle into it. And so the match, it wasn't just a match for the sake of doing a match, but there was a reason behind it. And maybe people were watching this and they were rooting for Preston Vance. I like that they at least tried to do that. And it's a valid point to bring up. You know, Brody was the TNT champion. And Preston Vance said, that to me is the title in AEW. More than any other title, that title is special to me because Brody held it. So then we get to the match. Come back from break. All that matters is what happens when you come back from break. Whatever happens beforehand doesn't really matter, right? It's when you come back from the picture-in-picture, what's going on? Well, what was going on is Darby was looking for the Fujiwara armbar. Ten was fighting him off. They end up heading outside the ring, and Ten is ramming Darby back first into the guardrail, back first into the ring apron. And Darby ended up on the top rope a couple minutes later. Did a cannonball dive out onto Ten and Allen Angels of the Dark Order. He wipes both men out. Sting is now walking over to the Dark Order. He's backing them up, making sure that they don't get too close. And while that's going on, Ethan Page assaults Darby Allin outside, rams him into the ring post, rolls him back inside. Nobody saw this. Ten hits a wheelbarrow into the rope-assisted German suplex. Darby kicks out. 10 goes for the full Nelson. Darby starts ripping at his mask. 10 gets the full Nelson. He gets the hurt lock. And Darby looks like he might be going out, but he kicks off the ropes for the Bret Hart Roddy Piper WrestleMania 8 finish, or the Bret Hart Steve Austin Survivor Series 96 finish, whichever one. WrestleMania came before that Survivor Series, so for me, that will always be the Bret Piper finish more than the Bret Austin finish, which has been used in a lot of other matches over the years since then, but I will always associate it with that WrestleMania match. And he uses it here to great success. He pushes off the turnbuckles with his feet, and he pins 10 for his 9th straight successful TNT title defense. Ethan Page and Scorpio Sky, they attack Darby and Sting in the ring when the match is over. Scorpio puts a heel hook on Sting. Lance Archer runs out, chases them off. I don't know what's going on with Lance Archer. For weeks, he would come out. He and Jake, they were like heels again after kind of being babyface for a while. They went back to being a heel, interrupting every Sting promo on TV. Now they're coming to Sting's aid like he's their grandfather. Gotta go save Grandpa. What the fuck is going on here? It's not exactly clear. Jake is coming up the rear. Jake didn't do anything. Jake came out. He had his cameo. What a night of work for Jake Roberts. But Lance Archer made the save, and that's what closed the show. That's what closed what I thought was a very good episode of Dynamite. Now, next Wednesday is the big Blood and Guts show, and I hope you're going to be back here with me. It's going to be a big episode of Dynamite. I'm going to be talking about all of it. We have the Inner Circle against the Pinnacle, Blood and Guts. We have Cody one-on-one with QT Marshall. We've got Kenny Omega and Michael Nakazawa taking on Jon Moxley and Eddie Kingston. Britt Baker will be in action. We have a four-way tag team elimination match. The winners will get a tag team title match on the May 12th episode of Dynamite. That's in 2 weeks. It's going to be SCU next week against Jurassic Express, against Varsity Blondes, against the Acclaimed. So then if that's the case, they said May 12th, right? Maybe they're not doing the match at Double or Nothing. Maybe they are going to do my idea, which was to build to Moxley and Kingston challenging for the titles at Double or Nothing. Because now that I think about this, what else would they be doing? I mean, we still don't know who Kenny Omega is going to be defending the title against. Is he going to be defending it again against Jon Moxley? Is he going to do it in a three-way against Moxley and Kingston? That's not exactly clear. But it would seem like they'll have some kind of involvement with Kenny Omega. So, I don't know, maybe they're going to do the SCU match on the May 12th episode of Dynamite. But I would think if you're going to have the final match of SCU, you know, to do that kind of blow off on pay-per-view would probably make more sense. Remember, they can't lose. They cannot lose this match or they're done. So, that seems to me to telegraph who's going to win this four-way match next week. It's going to be SCU. But here's the other match. In 2 weeks, talking about the May 12th episode of Dynamite. In 2 weeks, Jon Moxley is going to be defending his IWGP United States Championship for the very first time on Dynamite. I almost said live, but I don't know if that's a live show or not. Usually it's a week on, a week off. Next week is live, which would mean the 12th is not, but I think there's a period coming up where they might be going live more than 1 week in a row. So I don't know if it's live or not, but May 12th, Jon Moxley defends the IWGP US title against Yuji Nagata. New Japan Pro Wrestling's Yuji Nagata, who is flying into the States, and he is going to challenge Jon Moxley for the championship live on Dynamite. That is fucking cool as all hell. Not that I'm a huge Yuji Nagata fan. I know who he is. He's a legend. He's had some great matches. The cool thing is that we're getting an IWGP title match on Dynamite. All of this, it represents something bigger. This is bigger than Yuji Nagata coming to Dynamite. Yes, that is very cool. But it means that this is the first in what should be many matches like this to come in the months ahead. especially when travel restrictions really start to ease and we start to really climb out of it. I know things in Japan, they're doing shutdowns again. It feels like this shit will never fucking end, but it will at some point. And this is just a small taste, a small sample of what we can look forward to. You think having Yuji Nagata on Dynamite's cool? Well, imagine having some of the bigger names, the bigger current names in New Japan showing up on Dynamite, having matches on TNT. That's what I'm looking forward to. So this is going to be really cool. Watching Moxley defend that title, I love what it represents because it just means there's more to come. They talk about the forbidden door being open. I've been waiting for them to kick that thing open now for over a year. And it's finally happening, and that was out of nowhere. I wasn't expecting that. I don't think anybody was expecting that. So that's in 2 weeks on Dynamite. That's something to look forward to. Yuji fucking Nagata challenging for the championship in 2 weeks. What's going on, Sabian, in the chat? Just joining us right at the end of the review, too. Talk about bad timing. Indeed, Quizzical One, the Forbidden Door. It's all they talk about is the Forbidden Door. Tony Khan has said he is the Forbidden Door. If he is, then that's the richest Forbidden Door. That's the richest door I've ever seen in my life. Let's go to the poll. Looking pretty good so far. About 800 votes in. 81% thumbs up. 19% thumbs down. In the AEW Dynamite poll for April 28th, you can find that poll on Twitter at Solomonster. If you would like to vote, please do so. I want to hear from you. Let me know your thoughts on the show tonight. And right now, it's about that time. It's about that time that we throw it to you guys. What'd you think of the show tonight? What do you think about Blood and Guts coming up? You got predictions for me. Who's going over here? Who's being put over next week? Is it Jericho? Is it MJF? Is it the Inner Circle? Is it the Pinnacle? Are they both going to kill each other and there's going to be no winner? I want to hear from you guys. I already told you what I think, but I am but one person. I got to hear from you now. Ryan Spies, happy that Jericho cut a serious promo this week. Some of his stuff the last few weeks has not really fit for the big blood feud that they have been doing. Yeah, he had a nice rebound with that promo tonight. Jericho knows how to cut a promo. He doesn't forget. Food Hive with the $5. Food Hive was actually early tonight. It's very unlike Food Hive. Are you feeling okay? Are you doing well? Do you have... Is there something wrong? Usually he's late to the party. Nathan Cadia. Slept through most of the show and cannot stay due to working early, but I wanted to show some love. Thanks for everything you do. Thank you to Nathan. EJ with the $5. Did you see the next 30 for 30 is about the 1986 Mets? Are you thinking about reviewing it on YouTube? I wasn't planning to, but I would consider it if people were interested, even if it was an extra for members only on YouTube. If there's an appetite for it, I probably will watch it, so maybe. Maybe we'll do it as an extra for members. We'll see. Ryan Spies, I really want Darby against Ace Austin from Impact for the TNT title before Darby drops the championship. Could get some Impact talent on Dynamite, it's possible. They still have the relationship with Impact, so would kind of make sense that we see an Impact face here and there pop up. Maybe even Jordan Grace or Deonna Purrazzo or Tennille Dashwood or someone like that for the women. Food Hive, I canceled my membership, so to put it on this page. Hope you don't. I hope that doesn't mean you canceled your Sound Off membership. You mean you canceled some other membership to come and join this family. That better be what you're talking about. Cancel that Peacock and bring it on this way. By the way, I've given it a few weeks. This Peacock UI, it sucks. It really does. It's fucking terrible. They've gotten some content up on Peacock. Wrestling Challenge episodes that were up are now back. Superstar. It's weird. They put Superstars episodes up from 94, but not the stuff from 92 and 93 that they took down from the network. So, but just the way it's organized and everything, it's fucking garbage. It's absolute trash. It sucks. It really does. All you guys in all of those other countries right now who are still able to use the network in its purest form, you don't know how good you have it. Peacock sucks. Marcus Metcalf, thoughts on Blood and Guts cage design with the top and sitting on the ground, kind of like Hell in a Cell. From what little artwork I've seen, I think it looks cool. I mean, we'll see it in practice next week. The key, I think, is having a top on the cage. I'm happy they have one. So, I think it looks cool. Jacob Donnelly with the five. With the Yuji Nagata, not Nagama. Come on. Oh, Jacob. Jacob, did you just smear the good name of the legendary Yuji Nagata by calling him Nagama? Did you really just do that? With the Yuji Nagata match announced for May 12, I fully expect an Impact or New Japan appearance very soon, possibly during the Omega match next week. Rodimus Prime with the $40 super chat. I missed that one earlier. Holy shnikey. Rodimus Prime, thank you for the 40, man. That's very nice. Love the back and forth between the Pinnacle and the Inner Circle. Also here for Mox against Nagata on May 12th. Cannot wait. Ken terminated by DQ. Is it cool to hear Yuji Nagata's name since WCW? He's no Liger or Ultimo Dragon, but he is a Japanese Hall of Famer in my eyes. I wish Khan had hired Sonny Ono. Well, Sonny Ono is Eric Bischoff's friend. That's why he probably got his job in the first place. Although I did enjoy Sonny Ono. I thought he was cheesy, but in a good way, in WCW. Jacob, I love you, but don't ever say Nagama again. Food Hive, the Seidel brothers had 9 days to prepare. 9 days! They had 9 days! Yes, they had 9 days and they still fucking lost. Prince Walker. I don't know if you've seen the Max Caster interview on their YouTube page, but the dude is a star. Also, he's one of the only reasons I watch Dark and Elevation to hear the raps. He's one of those young talents that, you know, if they can... You know, he continues to improve and get better, get more experience. Hey, look, the sky's the limit. You know, there's a lot of young talent on those dark shows who are just waiting for an opportunity. And sometimes you just have to have something about you that really separates you and just makes you different than other people. And he, on the microphone, he's got a certain gift that not everybody has. And he needs to just tap into that and... whether it's rapping or just whatever, cutting promos, but he has a certain charisma that not everybody has. So I think that will suit him well in his career going forward. Natural Born Thriller with the $5. Hope you're doing well. I have not seen it yet, but did you watch Jim Johnston on Chris Van Vliet? I watched part of it. I'm not done with it yet. It's about an hour long. Very good interview. Chris always does a great job. But Jim Johnston, you know, he's one of those guys I wish I would have gotten him. I would have loved to have done an interview with him. But Chris, he spoke with him for an hour, talked about a whole bunch of different topics. You know, parting ways with WWE, Jim being shocked AEW didn't reach out to him. So I would tell everybody, if you have not checked it out and you want to hear from the music maestro himself, who apparently right now his services are not being tapped into by any wrestling organization, surprisingly enough, for all the wrestling companies that have a lot of shit music right now, They could probably use somebody like Jim Johnston. So hopefully somebody picks up the phone and calls him. Original Project, again, thank you for the $99.99 bomb earlier on in the stream. You are the man. Brian Becerra with the $15. Tornado warning here in San Antonio, Texas, on the drive home listening to the Dynamite Review. We'll get home quickly. I don't want you out on the road if there's a tornado coming through. That is very scary. Do you get many tornadoes down there in San Antonio, Texas? Ryan Spies, SCU against the Bucks is on May 12. It was announced the way... Yes, I realized that. I even had it in my notes, but I was thinking, man, they should do it at the pay-per-view, and I forgot that they had already announced for May 12. So that tells me they obviously have a bigger name in mind to challenge the Bucks on May 30th, I guess it is, or 28th, whenever Double or Nothing is. That's why I was thinking it could be Moxley and Kingston, unless Moxley and Kingston are tied up with Omega. Otherwise, I mean, it just feels too early for them to go into Omega and Hangman. I hope the plan is not to do Omega and Hangman at Double or Nothing. It just feels way too soon for that to be happening. Especially after tonight when Hangman just lost to Brian Cage. Natural Born Thriller. Jade should pull a Savage and hire her own manager. I think Jade should bring in Shaq as her manager. The True Heel Master. Did you see Peter Avalon? No. Oh. In a Car Shield commercial with Ric Flair. I feel like Rick secretly loves AEW deep down inside. Ric Flair does not secretly like AEW. Ric Flair, it's not much of a secret. Ric Flair likes money. That is what he is most interested in. He likes money. And apparently when he owes people money, he loves money so much that he refuses to give it back to them. So that's what Ric Flair loves more than anything else. Except maybe the booze. Uffman Entertainment. I listened to the sound off on Amazon Music. There you go. I love that. Cheap plug. Amazon Music. Get AmazonMusic.com/Solomonster. He loves it. 3 months free. On me. What are you waiting for? When you're done here, you go sign up for GetAmazonMusic.com/Solomonster. You can listen. I want you to listen to everything. You could be listening to your Frankie Valli. You could be listening to Elvis Presley. You could be listening to some Hall & Oates. You could be listening to some Fozzy. You could be listening to some Ozzy. You could be listening to some, I don't know, fucking Judas Priest. Judas Macias. You could listen to anything you want. They got everything on there. It's Amazon. Amazon has everything. Amazon owns the world. Anyway, thank you for the cheap plug, Guffman. I appreciate it. Ben Espinoza, you are awesome too, my friend. I appreciate that. That's right. Paul Heyman in the chat says you could listen to some Baron Corbin. I'd rather listen to some Baron Corbin theme music than watch a Baron Corbin match. Samoan Fan 101, the last WWF pay-per-view was Insurrection, not Backlash. I'm not counting the UK shows. You want to be technical about it? Yes, I'm talking about the main pay-per-views. That's what matters. Backlash was the last WWF pay-per-view to us Americans. Okay? You want to have US versus UK, like US against Canada in 97? We'll clean your clock, buddy. Bring it on. Backlash was the last pay-per-view. Dr. NXT Scorpio, let's hope Blood and Guts does not have an anticlimactic ending like the barbed wire death match. I don't think that we're going to see that. I think that they're going to make sure that doesn't happen. They haven't promised any literal explosions, so that's a good sign. Yeah, J-Dub, he sounds shocked at the amount of alimony that Ric Flair owes each month. Ric Flair himself has said, I think, It is somewhere in the range of $22,000 a month that he owes to his ex-wives in alimony. It could be more than that by now. What is he on now? Wife number what? Five, I think it is. See, when you owe $22,000 a month in alimony payments, you do things like CarShield commercials. I could probably get him to come on here and do a commercial for Get Amazon Music for me if I paid him enough. We'll give Ric Flair some super chat money. We got to help the guy out. Oh, my goodness. Who we got next, huh? Who we got next? We got the cheeseburger. That's who we got. Thank you for the $10. Do you think that someone from the inner circle is going to turn on the group and join the pinnacle like what Kurt Hennig did with the Four Horsemen in WCW? No. Pinnacle has six people, including Tully Blanchard. They do not need a seventh. Six is already too many. They do not need any more people. I do not see that happening. Magician Sapphire with the 10. I know some people are upset about Penta losing, but this seems like the start of a great feud and more great things to come for him. Well, I hope so. Him and Alex. The True Heel Master. Blood and Guts is going to be a bloody and messy... A bloody and messy what? You forgot to put an extra word in there. It would be great to see Jericho spike MJF in the eye and Shawn Spears rip Sammy's heart out. Well, okay, now I think TNT standards and practices would like to have a word with you. There are limits to what we will see in this match. Just because we have blood does not mean that it can turn into Mortal Kombat. There's a reason why Mortal Kombat dropped on HBO Max and not on a network like TNT or TBS. Zach Masters with the $5. Cannot stay long, just want to support the monster. Stay safe, bro. By the way, cool shirt. Thank you. Let me see, maybe you get a better view of it here. Hold on. See the eyeball? See the eyeball? I love it. Ryan Spies with $1.99. Cody against Agogo is the pay-per-view match. Could be. Could be. Think Cody would lose to One Punch? They've really been trying to get that punch over. Could they beat him this quickly? I don't know that I would do that. The True Heel Master, Jim Cornette's heart rate must be sky high. After watching Penta against Orange Cassidy, I wonder if AEW is trying to purposely get him angry. So your theory is that they are intentionally booking these types of segments to try to cause Jim Cornette to have some sort of heart episode that would result in his expiration. That is an interesting conspiracy theory. Ojali Burgos with the $10. When do you think they will release Sonny Kiss? They clearly don't care about him. I think he truly has something different to offer and would love to see him on Impact as X Division champion. Well, look, I mean, I enjoyed his work in Lucha Underground when he was doing the Exolicious stuff. He's not going anywhere. I don't get the impression that he dislikes working for AEW. So, I mean, ultimately, it's his call if he's really unhappy, but I don't get the sense that he is. The True Heel Master, get your plane ticket ready for Jacksonville. Orange Cassidy is climbing up the AEW rankings. Who knows? We may end up seeing Orange Cassidy against Kenny Omega at Double or Nothing. Anything's possible. I love me some Sova with the $5. Someone tagged Will Ospreay on Omega's Instagram post saying, claim your throne. Will Ospreay responded with, he knows where I am. Interesting. King of Doug style. Gotta go with the pinnacle. They need it to establish themselves as a dominant group. On a side note, make sure you click that like button. Indeed. I do love it when you guys do the promoting for me when I forget. Hit that like button. Hit that thumbs up if you have not already done so. I'm not talking about that lame-ass Orange Cassidy thumbs up. I'm talking about thumbs all the way up. There's no half-assing it here. BW Rojas, can you guess what weapons will be used in Blood and Guts next week? Yuji is no stranger to TNT. He has been on there before with WCW Nitro. That is true. WCW Monday Nitro. Absolutely. What weapons? It's going to be the usual ones. You'll have kendo sticks. We'll probably see thumbtacks and tables and chairs. Guarantee you're going to see kendo sticks. I mean, they're just incapable of not using them. Kendo sticks are like catnip for pro wrestlers now. They can't resist. BW, what order do you see Omega dropping the titles that he has? Also, before then, out of these titles, which one is next for Kenny? GCW, CCW, MLW, PWG, or NWA? MLW has their own thing going on. Is it Jacob Fatu, right, is the champion? He's not winning the MLW belt. Honestly, out of all of the... is PWG even a thing anymore? I thought they were pretty much dead at this point, which is kind of sad. GCW, nobody gives a shit about GCW. The GCW title on TNT, who gives a fuck? CZW, eh. Honestly, of all of them, if I had to pick one, it would be the NWA. Would be the most likely. And as far as what order I see him dropping them, I don't think he should lose until he drops the AW title first. So, if it were me, that's the one that goes first. Whether it's next month, whether it's in 3 months, 6 months. See, I don't think Impact is going to go that long, though, without having one of their talents as champion. Unless Omega plans on appearing on Impact on a regular basis, then that's fine for them. But I would not have him lose before he drops that AEW title. So the AEW title should go first, and then the Impact title should go next. And the AAA Mega Belt, I mean, he can lose it whenever. I mean, is it really that big of a deal? Ken Terminated. Which is worse? Jacob Donnelly butchering Nagata's name or Cole botching the Michinoku driver? I'm a huge fan of Taka and Sasuke. I shook my head. But Jacob Donnelly is an okay guy. Jacob Donnelly is more than okay. Jacob is... one of the good guys. We're having some fun with him. And Michael Cole botching will always be worse. Although nothing is as bad as him basically botching the finish of the WrestleMania main event. The Genius. You should be Jade's manager. Hey, not a hard guy to find. And I promise her, I will not take a big cut of her money. I would do it at a reduced rate. I will do my best to guide her career to the very top. To the very top, the championship in AEW. Jade and the Monster. I like it. I like it. BW, will you be reviewing Dark Side of the Ring Season 3? I will. And if I find that I just don't have time to fit it into the main show because I do the history segment and everything, it may end up being YouTube exclusive, but yes, I will be reviewing Dark Side of the Ring starting... well, I guess Dark Side is back next week, right? Next Thursday is the first episode, 2-hour season opener on Brian Pillman. And yeah, I will be reviewing it for sure. I do every year. People seem to really love the reviews last year, so we're going to do it again this year. Dr. NX... Brian Becerra... I made it home, yes, from time to time, severe weather here in San Antonio. Well, I'm glad you're safe. Dr. NXT Scorpio, what are the chances that someone in the Elite or another wrestler from New Japan cost Moxley the title? What title? Oh, the IWGP title. I don't see Nagata winning it, though. I don't see Nagata win. I don't think they want him dropping the belt just yet. I mean, he beat Kenta to then drop it to Nagata. I don't know. That doesn't really seem to make a lot of sense to me. So, unless the only reason they're doing it is to have Omega or someone from the Elite cost him? If that's the sole reason for doing the match, it's possible, but I don't see Nagata being the one to take the title from him. And the True Heel Master, and I believe we're all caught up. Do you see Nick Gage challenging Darby Allin for the TNT title? I do not. I don't really get the sense they're doing that open challenge thing anymore. I mean, Darby seems to be defending the title against AEW-based talent, as he should. So, no, I don't see it. Although Nick Gage is getting the Dark Side of the Ring treatment. I think he's one of the earlier episodes in the new season. He might be episode 2. He might be after the Pillman episode, now that I think about it. I think it's very cool, though, in the new season, now that we know all the topics, they're doing the one that I've been waiting for. They're doing one on the WWF steroid scandal, and they're doing one on Luna Vachon. There is a Luna Vachon episode. I think those are coming up. They're cutting the season in half. The Walking Dead does this, and it annoys the hell out of me, but we'll have like the first half of season 3, and then a little bit later on, end of the summer, I think in the fall, will be the second half. And that, I think, is when we're getting the steroid trial stuff, Luna Vachon, and some of those. But it's going to be a good season. I am looking forward to it. Luis Belmont Show says, you are caught up when I say you are caught up. Well, Luis, putting me in my place, saying, you're not done with the Super Chats until I tell you. You're done with the Super Chats. Thank you, Luis, for the $5. Glad to have Luis with us tonight. Now I think we're caught up. You know, True Heel Master, I'm going to kick you out of here. If you say The Goonies is a terrible movie, I might have to ban you. Are you kidding me? You know how many times I watched that movie growing up as a kid? I used to watch that movie all the time, looking for One-Eyed Willie's treasure. Of course, I didn't get the One-Eyed Willie reference at that time as an adult. As a five-year-old trapped inside the body of an adult, of course, now I look at that reference a little bit differently, but One-Eyed Willie and Chunk doing the truffle shuffle and, you know, Sloth and... Come on! I mean, what's not to like? You got Corey Feldman in there. The Goonies needs a sequel. Or a needed one. That's too late now, but they should have done a sequel. I'm kind of sad they never did. That's right, the Truffle Shuffle. I didn't forget. I might have to set that as like a $300 super chat or something. It would be an image of Solomonster doing the Truffle Shuffle in the background. Oh, man. Oh, my goodness. Did I see Big Cass? I did. Yes, I did. He is looking much better than he did the last time I saw him. He's going to have a run for himself in Impact, and I hope he does well. I hope he's got his shit together. And again, that's another great interview that Chris did. If you missed it, Chris Van Vliet did a whole interview with Big Cass. I think a little over an hour. This was a few weeks ago, and it's a very raw, very real interview, where he's just very open about his addiction issues and, you know, coming close to death and wanting to die and almost accepting it and, you know, having to kind of fight his way back to where he is now. You know, it's a nice little redemption story, but again, it's still early. So you gotta be careful here. He's still on that journey back from where he was, and I hope everything works out for him. Had a friend who went to school with him back when he used to play, I believe, basketball at NYU. So I know he's rooting for him as well. Elvenzi says there was a plan to remake The Goonies. Well, that sounds like a terrible idea. And I'm glad that never happened. For exactly the reason that the True Heel Master says. That's a perfect example. RoboCop 1987, he says, is better than RoboCop 2014. I mean, that's like saying, you know, that's like saying if I had a pork chop, a perfectly delicious fully cooked pork chop sitting on this desk right now, which I wish I had, and then saying, oh, look, on the floor, my dog took a shit, and saying, oh, well, this pork chop is better than that pile of dog shit. Yeah, no kidding. That's another movie that never had to be remade. The original RoboCop from 87, it's timeless. Some movies just don't need to be remade. It's a no-win situation. Some movies are just so iconic, or they're just so good in the state that they were in all of its originality, whatever word you want to use. There is no possible way, even if you make a good movie, that people are going to accept it as being anywhere close to the original. You may as well just call it something else. RoboCop 87 was a movie that I watched way too young. That movie messed me up. I should not have watched that movie at the tender age of 7 or 8 or whatever I was. Definitely not a movie for someone at that age, or even 10 or 12. Should not be watching the original RoboCop. Yeah, the acid man, the acid bath that he took, that's the scene that stuck with... Actually, no, there's two scenes that stuck with me. The acid guy, yes, but early in the movie, it was the scene with Murphy. When Murphy is... And when I say shot to death, I mean shot to death. That is the most traumatic scene. Yeah, the acid guy, it's just gnarly to look at. The most disturbing scene in that movie is the Murphy death scene. And it's kind of ridiculous when you think of all the gunfire he took, how he was even still alive before ultimately he was killed. But nevertheless, that was very disturbing. I think that would be disturbing to you as, you know, an adult, let alone as a child. Food Hive sent in one last super chat here. What was for dinner? He says, I feel it wasn't cereal. Well, I'm sorry to disappoint you. It indeed was cereal. But yet, as Paul Heyman points out in the chat, he does make a very good point. Despite what happened to him in the movie, the producers of the movie still did not kill Murphy as badly as WWE killed Murphy. The True Heel Master, just kidding about the Goonies. Do you see New Japan doing joint shows with AEW and Impact once crowds are at full capacity? No, I mean, I think at some point there's definitely a possibility that we could get a joint show one time. But that would be the extent of it. I just think logistically it becomes very difficult to do something like that. It's a lot easier to have like a talent exchange, send some AEW talent to New Japan, send New Japan talent to AEW to work, you know, a handful of matches. I think that's far more likely than any kind of big supercard, pay-per-view type thing. Jay Knight says, if they ever touch the Running Man or Police Academy, furniture will be flying. Food Hive says, remake Halloween 3. You better not put that evil out there in the world. Halloween 3 is fine just the way it is. Mr. Delgado says, Trent? Noise the shit out of me. Did you like any of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre movies? I've watched a few of them. The first one was just very disturbing to me in a way that made me not want to watch it ever again. I actually, you know, it was one of these late night things. I think I must have been laying in bed going through movie channels when I was in high school or something. And I saw one of the remakes. They remade the movie in 1995 with Matthew McConaughey and Renee Zellweger. And I didn't even know what it was at first. Then I realized, oh, it's a Texas Chainsaw Massacre remake. That was pretty disturbing movie. I finally saw Matthew McConaughey, by the way, in True Detective. I finally watched season one of True Detective. I saw season two before I saw season one. And now I see what all the hype was about. I think Rust Cole, the character that Matthew McConaughey plays, one of the best television characters I've ever seen. What a great fucking show. Great, great season. Now I'm just debating if I should watch season three. I want to watch season three. I'm sure it's not as good as season one, but if anybody has seen it and thinks it's worthwhile, because I'm thinking about diving into that very soon. Now everybody's just naming a bunch of random 80s and 90s movies. All right, so we're all caught up. I have gone through all my news. We've talked about Dynamite from this week. We've run down the preview for next week's Big Blood and Guts show. I am looking forward to it. Again, if you missed the show tonight, and I have to recommend just one thing to you, watch the parlay between the Inner Circle and the Pinnacle. It is exactly, I mean, every wrestling promotion out there can take lessons from what AEW did with that segment tonight. That is how you promote a main event level match. That is how you get people to want to watch a big match. That is how you promote the payoff to this blood feud between these two rival warring factions, these two gangs that are going to go toe-to-toe next week. And they never laid a finger on each other. So that was the best segment on the entire show. Rick says season three is worth it of True Detective, then I shall watch that. Thank you, sir. I appreciate that. I'm going to be back with you for episode 702 of the Sala Monster Sounds Off this Sunday on all the usual podcast platforms as Boombox Brock makes a cameo here on the screen. Lou Rivera, I love this channel. This channel rules. Lou, thank you, sir. You know why it rules? It rules because of people like you. You guys are what make this channel so fun every week. I love just hanging out with you guys. And we're going to be doing more fun stuff, too, with our members. Our channel members. More Q&As, more retro audio for the Legends tier members coming up. Couple of other fun things I've got in mind. So if you're not a channel member, hit that join button. Luis Belmont Show. Looking forward to Blood and Guts next week. Better than watching The Suite Life on deck on Disney Plus. Where did that come from? Yeah, I would think watching most things is probably better than watching I thought you were going to say The Suite Life of Zack and Cody. Wasn't that a thing on Disney Channel at one point? Who'd we miss? We just missed another one that just came in. Hold on a second here. I was trying to leave, and you guys are trying to get me to stay. Magician Sapphire, no more remakes and sequels to 80s and 90s movies. Hollywood has a bad track record of screwing up great classics. Well, I would pose this question to all of you. Can you, really quickly here before we wrap up, can you name for me, in all seriousness, no joking or anything like that, but like, can you name to me what you feel is the best Hollywood remake of a major film? Maybe it's one of your, it's a classic. They went and they just completely remade or reimagined it, but it actually turned out to be great. Maybe it even rivaled the original. If you had to pick one, what would it be? What would you recommend to everybody in the chat? What would you recommend to me? Because it is very rare. You do a remake and you just kind of cringe, like, why are they doing this? But there's got to be one. There's got to be at least one that you could think of that you would say, you know what, this turned out to be almost as good as the original, if not better. Mad Max, Shaft, Scarface. Did they remake Scarface? Jumanji, True Grit, The Thing. That's true, actually. John Carpenter. Yeah, well, that is true, I guess, right? Did they make an original Thing movie? Carpenter's was not the original. Yeah, The Thing would be pretty high up there. Not the more recent one they did in 2011 or whatever it was. The Ring, 310 to Yuma, Judge Dredd. Some of these are not good. Your taste in some of these movies is questionable. Beethoven 2. Oh my God. The Al Pacino Scarface was really a remake. Yeah, okay. Well, that's true. I guess that's true, actually. That is true. Well, then that, you know what? That and The Thing would be at the top of my list. Because I love those. The 80s versions are fucking awesome. True Hill Master says Mortal Kombat. I don't know. I'm getting mixed reviews about the new Mortal Kombat. Yeah, Mr. Super. Yeah, I was thinking not of the original Scarface. So you're right. Scarface would absolutely be up near the top of that list. I love Scarface with Al Pacino. I love Scarface. I feel like we could do a whole movie podcast here. I might have to think about that. Crown King of France says, as questionable as your taste in wrestling. Well, I can't argue with you. I watch Raw every week. You're not wrong. Raw is fucking garbage. So you're absolutely right. The fact that I watch Raw every week, feel free to question my taste in wrestling, because you're not wrong. Juan was not a fan of the new Mortal Kombat movie. Food Hive says Stephen King's It. Never saw the original It. I saw the new one. I never saw the, believe it or not, me being the 80s guy and everything, I never saw the original. The Longest Yard, The Godfather, The Fly. The Fly. The Fly, that's a pretty good one. Yeah, sometimes I do forget that Scarface and The Thing from the 80s, those were not the originals. But they were the best, in my opinion. They were the best. All right, so I think that's a good place to put a cork in it. Again, 7:02 this weekend. We got a lot more history and a lot more news to cover this weekend. And then, of course, next Wednesday, it is Blood and Guts. Right back here live on YouTube. Blood and Guts Review. Thank you for making me your destination for your Dynamite coverage, as many of you do each and every Wednesday night. I sure do appreciate it. And we got a lot more content coming up in the month of May, which begins this weekend. So until then, be well, stay safe, have yourselves a fantastic rest of your evening. Follow me on Twitter at Solomonster. I'm on there all the time. And I will see you back here again next Wednesday for more Dynamite. Until then, take care, everybody. Again, Ryan Pillman. Don't forget, Dark Side of the Ring next week. This is the Pillman shirt. I'm going to wear it in his honor. Take care, guys.